On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
Castle Vecchio ran out of his skin. Tiakau Shark, brilliant run from the barrier. The rides of Craig Williams, Opie Bossom were absolutely phenomenal.
Once the pattern is set of the race, there's not much you can do about it. And the pattern that was set early had Bowen declare who he was and had Surprise Baby where else. Once that is set, then you struggle to break the mould.
The money ruined Arcadia Queen's campaign.
That's what I'm saying.
It was a cash grab instead of training her properly for a Cox Plate or McKinnon.
But what I'm saying is we felt the effect of what the Landys has done.
And I know all the jockeys says we need the whip. Well, yep, you can carry your whip, but you can't use it in the final 200 because that's the vision that you sent to those outside of the sport.
It is a pimple on its backside, the Everest to the Melbourne Cup. I mean, the Melbourne Cup's massive. It gets worldwide attention.
Thank God for Nature Strip, or else it would have been as bleak as the weather, my punting.
Ah, welcome to the verdict. It is a verdict after Zipping Classic Day, which means we round out the Spring Carnival in town. We've still got the Ballarat Cup meeting, but I wonder how Matty Stewart and Mickey Lynch ended the carnival. Mickey Lynch, to you. How are you, Lynchy?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Michael, and it was a great end.
Microphone technique has been off there. For those of you who are wondering what that sound is, Mick Lynch had no idea that big thing in front of you is what you meant to talk into.
Well, I should have an idea because I'm not exactly a newcomer to this particular art form, am I? But however, we digress.
Fellgate's show described as an art form.
Well, it's performance art, isn't it, where we're concerned. But look,
what type of character is Matt Stewart?
Well, ex certificate, that one. But can we just stop digressing then? Sandown, I must say, I thought it was terrific. Really enjoyed it. The weather was kind, which
finally
it hasn't
got some
been
good weather
all spring. And you know, you look at it, the horses were winning from off the pace, on the fence, coming wide, leading, and you just wonder why so many people bag it.
Do we know what the crowd was on Saturday?
I wasn't there. I was at Yay. What was the feeling?
Well,
of the
there was
crowd?
A bigger. Well, normally there's three men and a dog there, family and close friends only, isn't it? Because of midweeks and stuff like that. There was a decent crowd. I mean, Stephen Baster remarked on it as he came back to scale, saluting his last winner on his last ride, and said it was nice to see people here. Mm. You know, and obviously he was pretty up for it because he'd got that last race win and was getting applauded. But it just felt, you know, on that lawn area outside of the members, you know, that little hillock about the 100 metre mark, there were reasonable crowd, and I don't know, it just felt like a kind of nice end of term kind of breakup day, but with a bit of quality about it.
It'll be interesting to see when Josh Blanksby tweets out the turnover results, as he does after each MRC meeting, to see what the turnover figures were on Sandown, because we know throughout the spring they've been down as a whole across the board. So I know you're a massive Sandown fan. I know most of the industry participants are, but we'll wait to see what the future holds. But on Saturday, I still thought the races were a little thin, a little small. I'd like to have seen big numbers, but I suppose when you're getting to the end of the Spring Carnival, as you've said so many times, there are only so many horses that can continue to race so often.
I didn't think it was particularly down. When I looked at it, I thought this is about right for a Sandown Classic, Zipping Classic, Sandown Cup Guineas Day. I only watched it from afar, so I can't really comment because I was up at beautiful Yay. But I just wonder whether the argument for retaining Sandown has just gained a little bit of traction that maybe the club didn't expect when they revealed its, you know, the $300 million plan for Caulfield, and then the consequence would shed some focus on what the future of Sandown. There is that Facebook page, and there's a lot of. Would you say that the MRC may be a little bit surprised at the rearguard action for Sandown?
Yeah,
in recent months?
Yeah, possibly. In the media and also amongst the racing participants. You know, Mick Kent has been on this show, hasn't he? A very strong advocate of retaining Sandown, and he's not Robinson Crusoe. It's hard to talk to a trainer or a jockey or anyone involved in the sector who says it's not a terrific place to race a horse, you know.
Do you sense that, Michael, that there's more resistance than they maybe anticipated?
Well, I think the industry, the participants, certainly don't want to see it gone. But I think those who are in head office haven't changed their minds, even at Racing Victoria. So I think it's probably inevitable if they get the zoning clearance.
Which they haven't got yet. They haven't got to that stage.
And it's all pending on that. If it gets the zoning clearance and it turns into a $1 billion housing asset that they can sell, It's going to be difficult for them to say no.
There's an interesting parallel here. Kempton Park, which is just sort of southwest London fringes, the Jockey Club own that. They want to sell that. And that is a race course that hosts some of the biggest jumps, the second or third biggest jumps race of the year. But a load of flat racing and the all-weather, which keeps the flat ticking over. And they want to sell that. Now there's a rearguard action being fought by the racing industry there. And so far, the planners in that borough in London have refused planning permission. So it's not a given. Australia's maybe a little more entrepreneurial, shall we say, and the planners may give it the go-ahead, but it's not necessarily a done deal.
I was having a chat to Mike Simons, the former MRC chairman, probably a couple of months ago or a month ago, and he was saying, we were talking about Sandown, he said his understanding is the $300 million project at Caulfield is not fully dependent on the sale of Sandown. He said Sandown could still, I hope I'm not misrepresenting him here, but that was the gist of the conversation was it can still be done without the other thing
well,
happening.
Well, I think with their, and again, we'd need clarification on this, but I think with the plans for the building developments, the housing apartment developments, is, and they made a lot of money off the developments as well. The MRC is one of the richest race clubs because of their investment outside of racing and their revenue streams, which they've been very, very smart in doing. So I don't know whether it can be developed to the nth degree of two tracks lights without the sale of Sandown, but it can most definitely be redeveloped without the sale.
Maybe that's those who want to save Sandown, maybe they're aiming at a compromise. Maybe there might be have to be. Maybe that's the perfect scenario.
Maybe the compromise is Sandown continues as a race course most of the year, but replaces Werribee as the, you know, the international's quarantine centre, which it did do. You know, there's still a lot of complaints or a lot of issues maybe surrounding Werribee that we've brought up and talked about here. Maybe Sandown could, you know, sort of wash its face as a result of performing that function for 3 or 4 months.
Well, there's a lot of talk about rationalisation and do we need 4 metropolitan racetracks in Melbourne? Is it financially viable from an industry point of view, which are questions that I don't know the answers to. But as we said last week, and we've said for quite some time, is that if you wanted to keep Sandown, you would need to spend quite a bit of money to improve the facilities if you wanted to make it a racecourse that you want people to attend.
Well, we can't see Mooney Valley going anywhere now with its reconfiguration. They're investing a lot of money on that, aren't they? So, you know, I mean, what are you suggesting? Maybe one of the MRC's tracks, maybe not Sandown then, but, well, you know, would Caulfield be a bigger property play than anything else?
Caulfield's not owned by MRC, it's owned by the council. They have the Acorn lease agreement, so Caulfield's there for perpetuity.
Anyway,
my bad.
Whatever the time frame is, I still think it's wonderful, Sandown. And
what about the race meeting itself?
Yep.
Can there be anything done to give it an extra hook? And I saw Paul Bloodworth tweet out and take it on board that the MRC did tip a bit of money in and put a lot of promotion into it in years gone by, but they didn't get bigger fields. They didn't get more headline horses there. So at the end of the day, it's just continued to roll along with the same kind of prize money levels. No bonuses moving into the final day. So it's basically to the most, I suppose, people outside of racing, the carnival finishes the final day of Flemington. And then there's kind of a little add-on.
Well, the bigger Flemington's become means that Sandown just seems like a little bit lost, doesn't it? But don't forget also that the MRC's intention is to sell Sandown, and the most comfortable way they can do it is if Sandown looks less attractive. You know,
I see your point of view, but I don't see the MRC wanting to run down one of their own meetings.
I'm not saying that, but I'm not saying they're not going to inject a lot of stake money and interest in something that's not going to be there for long. It just doesn't seem to make sense to do
that. Well, the meeting would still remain whether you would run it back at Caulfield again.
Yeah, but if you want to improve Sandown and make it more attractive for more fans to go, you're going to have to improve the, you know, get rid of the analog TV connections, which are still there, and lick of paint. The joint's basically crumbling. I just don't see why they put so much energy into something that they're going to knock down.
I sort of think it's an interesting meeting. No, it's not the carnival, effectively, it does end on Stakes Day at Flemington. But this is kind of a wind-down day, a break-up day, as I said. And, you know, I've got, just looking at it here, you have a very interesting two-year-old race. The winner will probably now go on to be a Blue Diamond leading contender. You had, the Stayers sort of Plodders Cup for the second rate stayers, but Azzurro once again showed that Australia, you know, has got horses that can stay these trips if they're given the chance. That's the third time he's won at two miles, isn't it?
I think he hailed from overseas.
He might have done, yeah, but he's been trained here now for a couple of years. You had a Guinea, Shillong has gone on and looks as if that could be a good prospect for the Sangster or something later. And you know, you can go through the card and Southern France, the Cup Consolation in the Zipping Classic. I think there's plenty of interest there. And in terms of numbers, I've just flicked through it, Michael. Every race was each way betting, bar one. The Manolo Barnick scratching from the Sandown Stakes meant it was only seven there. Well, but there were eight and above in every other race.
The other thing, too, is look, it was a beautiful sunny day, and it's a beautiful sunny day today. It's going to be 30 degrees tomorrow. And people who are frustrated by the fact that the month of November and early December is ignored by racing. You know, one of the advantages of Sandown is it's, of all the races in spring every year, it's the one where you're most likely to rock up in shorts.
Was it free entry on Saturday or was it a charge to get in, Lynchy?
It's always free entry for us. It's journos, isn't it? I don't know. I can't tell you
because you could
that.
Make it more of a family day, free entry. Because that's the one thing which you watch or listen to social media and feedback about. Trying to get people back to the track is the cost and what you experience on course. Now, I know we mentioned it with Neil at the VRC, which is a different kettle of fish because that's the premium race days, the premium meetings. But outside of that, I'd love a club to go, you know what, it's free entry. You're going to get half-price beers, half-price food.
Mixed drinks that cost a fortune at Sandown.
Take a little hit on what the catering cost would be just to try and entice people.
But that requires marketing and promotion. How much marketing and promotion did you see going into the Sandown Classic meeting?
Well, none.
No, exactly. No. Well, why is that?
I'm actually with Michael here. I do think these sort of things, initiatives, will spur interest, you know.
But what I'm saying is the MRC is not investing money in marketing and promoting the Sandown Classic meeting. Isn't that obvious?
Well, I haven't seen anything.
It does look that way, Matt, yeah, and certainly the infrastructure there. I don't know, when was it open, 1965? Has it actually had any work done on it since then?
Well, anyway, it is what it is. We had a lovely day up at Yay. Just a little thing that emerged up there.
Are you getting paid by the picnic clubs? Are you getting paid to promote them?
Why would I have to be?
I don't know, because that's all you talk about
these days. Where would you rather go on an average Saturday, Flemington or Alexandra or Yay or somewhere? You'd rather go to Flemington, you're
tough. I'd like to go to the picnics as well. But anyway, I'm only having a dig at because that's all you're enamored with the picnics.
No, it's just that I happened to be there. That's where I was on Saturday. There's just one thing that popped up is that the track raced very, very firm and it was put out as a good four. And there was so much frustration up there, and the view of the trainers and the owners that I spoke to was, this is the last chance saloon for a lot of these horses. If we're talking about animal welfare, these horses need to be kept in the system because if they're all breaking down on tracks that are misrepresented by the track rating, then it makes it less and less possible to
is
keep these
the
horses
issue
in
with
circulation.
Amateur racing, which is what it is that you've got non-professionals who look after the tracks. Water the tracks, therefore you can't expect it to be, I suppose, held to the professional standards?
Well, one of the trainers showed me the watering that had occurred in the week leading up to there'd been zero rainfall and 5 mils of rain had been put on over a reasonably long period of time. This has got a golf course in the middle of it with sprinklers, so I just think you can't have a less concerned view about that sort of stuff just because they're picnic horses. They're still animal welfare issues with these horses. They pull up sore, you know, and they don't have a lot more opportunities in life than continuing on this circuit. So if you're mindful of the animal welfare stats and stories, be very careful about protecting these horses.
Well, that's still under the Racing Victoria auspices.
Well, that's right. There's not much of a future for a broken down slow horse, is there?
Is it fair to describe them as amateurs? I mean, semi-professional would almost cover a lot of the people, surely, at the picnic. Races now.
Well, I'm talking about infrastructure and money that they have. So if you're running a picnic race club, you know, who knows, the watering bill might be too much for a picnic race club. So there's other issues.
Well, it depends where the budget comes from. Just a text came through, Steve from Rye. The grandstand at Sandown is heritage listed. So what impact would any change have on the protection of the heritage? Because, you know, with something's heritage listed, it's very hard to...
Well, wasn't that the case at didn't they have to preserve something of Waverley when
yeah, the grandstand's still there.
When they got rid of that and made it housing, and I think South Melbourne, you know, the stadium formerly known as Bob Jane Stadium, but that's got the ancient South Melbourne stand still there.
There's a good tweet here too, which I agree with, like whether race clubs are there to be enormously wealthy businesses or their primary role is as a racing club. The MRC is a very rich club. If they're so rich, why sell Sandown? How rich do you want to become? You know, what's the balance between
because
getting rid of a valuable asset?
They want to pay for a $300 million upgrade to Caulfield.
Well, the previous chairman says they don't need to achieve that.
Well, not the full amount, anyway. I would imagine.
Anyway, it's all conjecture.
And but, at the end of the day, too, it comes down to the vote of the MRC members, don't forget.
Which is, such a monumental decision down to a group of a couple of hundred people who are only half interested. I find that unusual that's the case.
Well, I think that's just what's in their charter.
It's the constitution, isn't it? And it's the way they run. Maybe the world is evolving and race clubs, like everything else, are changing. Maybe those constitutions need to change. Maybe there has to be a wider perspective and more consultation with the industry, which will have as much weight.
A couple of interesting talking points out of Sandown on Saturday. There's an investigation or an inquiry ongoing into Lavendi, a pre-race blood sample and trot up that the Galagotis team were not too happy about. It's blown up, and I believe that Michelle Payne's got involved on Twitter as well. So
a few others too.
You've been speaking to Jamie Steer, also the Galagotis team this morning.
Robert Cram.
So what's the latest there?
So the blood test that they were able to achieve, despite the fact that the horse was getting a bit cranky, will be available. The result of that will be available today. That's a pre-race blood. This is a stable that's got a ongoing investigation into an illegally high TCO2 from July at Sandown. So that's still to play out. The stewards are saying these are commonplace. The pre-race bloods are commonplace. The trot-ups for horses in the, you know, back from injury and all this stuff, commonplace as well.
25 minutes before a race, is that commonplace to have it so close to a race?
45 minutes it was, the trot-up.
I thought I read it was 25 minutes. Okay. So
the blood was
that time,
25 minutes.
That time, is that commonplace?
The steward said yes. He said, but Robert Cram also said, look, maybe in an ideal world you might do it a little bit earlier, but it all comes down to availability of time frames and staff. But he said he's comfortable with the time frame of the trot-up as well. The Galagotises are saying, well, this is a signature horse. This horse has been in work, it's trolled. Why haven't they been interested in any of these, you know, fitness tests, trot-ups and all that sort of stuff? And they are arguing that the horse, they're not blowing about the blood test necessarily, but they're really unhappy that the trot-up occurred past fillies, it's a colt and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Look, I was at Sandown and Manny in particular did engage with quite a lot of us journalists outside the steward's room, and he was blowing, as Matt says, it's not about the fact they wanted to do it, it's the process that I think upset them so much, and the time frame, and the point he was making, you know, he's got colts, he's got fillies around him and mares, he's an entire, you're G'ing him up so close to the race, what if he goes backwards and, or, you know, rears up and damages himself. So that was the big issue as far as Manny and Peter were concerned, I think, more than the actual fact they wanted to trot the horse and swab him up. But he did make the point, as you said, he's been in work a while. They didn't show a lot of interest before that. But I guess if every horse is subject to the same conditions, you know, it's just the way the game goes now, isn't it?
Yeah, and a lot of, I think the Allerton Zara stable tweeted their full support of the protocols that were adhered to by the stewards. So I think the other one little thing too in the defence of the Galagotis is about their behaviour, in inverted commas. They are very animated and passionate guys. If they say, oh, we were just passionate and concerned, and someone else says, oh, no, they were abusive and hysterical, quite often, I think their body language can be very animated at times. But that's just
certainly, me. I was outside the steward's room for a good 20 minutes, and Mickey Manley from the Herald Sun was there, and Craig Brennan from AAP, and a few others. They were animated, but they weren't abusive. I mean, and, you know, they were sort of staying under control because their passions show, don't they? We've seen them, you know, after winning races.
But were you there?
I wasn't
at the time
in the
with the vet, because
where the discussion occurred between the blood testing vet and the
doctor. No, I wasn't there because you know when that's I think that's where
the situation occurred, not where you were. Alleged that the discussion between the Galagotis and the vet or the stewards up at the horse stalls. Now, you spoke to Robert Cram about is it only certain horses that are tested?
Interesting. Well, it makes sense, and it would always have been the case too, because you've got to narrow your focus to a likelihood or certain factors that lead you to certain stables. And he said, you know, the fact that there is an ongoing TCO2, the stable's history of elevated but not illegal bicarb levels will channel interest as well. So I think he called it strategic targeting. And you know,
is that like racial profiling?
Well, I mean, you might get a stable that might say, well, hang on a minute, we haven't been pinged for anything, but you keep targeting us. The stewards will say, well, your levels are on the threshold, and we have an ongoing investigation into an illegal TCO2. So they might say, you know, it's like if you're in, you know, the bank robber analogy. If someone's robbed 50 banks before, and you're probably...
How did Lavendi pull up, by the way?
I think fine.
Manny said in passing, you know, that they were happy with him. I mean, he was last of the eight, but, you know, you'd expect that 1,300-metre race. He's a mile-and-a-half Derby winner. And Manny said that they were happy enough with him, but they'd only really know. They had to wait till 6:25 or 6:30 for the blood test, and you know they'd have a better idea during the week.
Well, let's hope he has pulled up well, because we want to see good horses like Lavendi back. We're going to take a break in one moment. Before we do, one other issue out of Sandown, and it's another issue that we talk about quite regularly, is the whip situation. Stevie Baster, congratulations to Stevie. Brilliant to see him win his final race ride. He alluded to us on the Friday he was going to do everything to get it over the line, and he certainly did, including breaching the whip rules. He copped a $1,000 fine on the way out, which many people might say was a little light, but it brings into focus once again the absurdity of these whip rules for horses that win by small margins. What do you think, Lynchy?
Well, I think, and I said this about 2 years ago on this show, I think probably if you want to deter it, you've got to start disqualifying the winners. And I think that is, and Charlie Fellows has said that, even though he's been a beneficiary of it at Royal Ascot this year. He was a beneficiary in the Melbourne Cup of his horse not getting disqualified. But in the end, I just think that is the deterrent, that, you know, jockeys will try their utmost to win and they'll breach the rules. And if I'm owning my horse and yours beats me a short half eyelash and your lads it is double the times, I would want to object. And I don't know why more trainers and owners don't object.
Well, because the stewards have gone on record in the past to say that they can't uphold it because we can't quantify how much an extra whip strike can give an advantage to a horse.
You can quantify it because you say this is the rule.
That's if they want to bring in a disqualification law. But at the moment, there is no disqualification. So there's been protests in other jurisdictions and the stewards have said, well, look, I don't know if a whip strike is equal to a short half head or a head.
In which case, why have rules then?
Well, but if you introduce a rule that says if you breach, you are disqualified, then they don't even have to explain it.
Do you think we'll have a racing jurisdiction or a stewards panel gutsy enough to bring in a rule like that?
Well, I don't really know. You'd like to think that it's under whoever the new CEO of Racing Australia is. It has to be a national rule.
Yeah, I think we will have. I think one panel somewhere will grasp the nettle, because it will be so flagrant and so obvious, and they'll do it, and then that will then be a trigger and others will be emboldened as a result.
Well, it just isn't absolutely directly related to this, but very much connected. I think what you will definitely find in the short term, in the near future, is this ridiculous situation of unfettered whip use in the last 200 metres. I think you'll find that gets scrapped. Because it's so stupid and so obviously
we've got no
stupid
CEO at Racing Australia at the moment, and they haven't exactly been the swiftest moving organisation.
The jockeys are in discussion about such things at the moment with whoever. So
to say that they are happy to allow that to occur.
Well, I think the Jockeys Association understands the folly of that rule.
Their speed of movement, glacial.
We're going to take a break. You're listening to The Verdict. Give us your thoughts. Plenty of SMSs coming through. We'll get to them after the break. 0416 90 50 52. Still to discuss some of the performances from the weekend. And Hong Kong yesterday. Athero, unbelievable. Beauty Generation. Is Matty Stewart right? Is he just a bubble boy?
Welcome back to The Verdict. Before we get on to Hong Kong, let's talk about some of the performances on the track on Saturday. Southern France, Lynchy finally lived up to the hype and the talent that he has showed overseas. He looked gone on the point of the turn, but gee, he was strong and dominant in the end.
It was. Good job he was running at Sandown, wasn't it? Nice long straight for him to wind up.
Anywhere else.
He would, well, Flemington would have been okay as well. But yeah, I mean, Mark Zara was, you know, rowing more than the Oxford and Cambridge boat crews combined, wasn't he, at the top of the straight. And the horse took a while to pick up. But when he picked up, He did the job very nicely. It would look in this country as if a mile and a half is going to be his minimum trip. They did mention the Australian Cup. You'd think they'd need a very fast run race to get him into that.
He's going to put blinkers on him.
Yeah, well, blinkers might help.
Could end up in Dubai.
Well, Kieran said he's made two plans in the post-race chat. He said, I've made two plans. One is he stays here with me and possibly the Australian Cup, the Tancred, those sort of races. Or he may go back to Aden and be prepared for Dubai. Or Kieran may prepare him for Dubai. And then Royal Ascot, where Kieran could prepare him, or Aden might have it. Who knows? But the Hardwick Stakes, I think, is a Group 2 race over a mile and a half. The likes of Fiorente won that in their younger days before coming to Australia. So, I mean, that's a kind of ambitious programme. But when they bought him, they said, we wanted to buy a younger horse, he's 4 by Northern Hemisphere time, and we want to campaign him internationally and have fun with him. So that looks like it's the agenda.
But that's the other thing about the virtues of Sandown. You know, a lot of these horses come out from Europe and you get one, the first look you get of them is in a Melbourne Cup where it's just a bit hard to judge what you've actually got on your hands. Mm. That was a lovely opportunity for that stable to have a second look at Southern France and properly get the head around him, because Melbourne Cups can be very, particularly this year, very inconclusive.
Yeah, so I think they only made a late decision to nom him and run him. They said he was going well at home and let's have another look. And you're right. Do you remember the Taj Mahal from the Lloyd Williams stable was a bit like that? A couple of years ago, they really only had a look at him in the Melbourne Cup, then came out and blitzed the Sandown Cup, made all the running, and then won it again, I think, last year for Benny Mellum.
Well, I think seven of the last 15 or something like that.
Maybe even more have run in the Melbourne Cup. And if you actually looked at that Nerf Bosch, which ran third, had come through the Melbourne Cup as well. So, you know, so much for the Cup flattening them. I mean, you know, we're sitting...
But again, this is the class and quality and the depth argument, because really, Humidor's a light of other days. I don't know. Good luck to getting him back again. Maybe next campaign, because he hasn't had the best campaign. Ventura Storm's an average horse. Yeah. Gallic Chieftain puts in a good run now and then. Patrick Aaron, you know, he has a birthday.
But Sandown's never been better than that. That's what you get at Sandown. You don't get better. That's as good as it gets at Sandown. And I think it's reasonable that's as good as you get.
Apart from the odd exception like Zipping, who was a genuine Group 1 horse, and that's what a race is named
Zara
after.
Zara got pinged for the whip in that race too.
Yeah,
I saw he tweeted he's going off to Bali, Maldives, maybe Hong Kong, see you 2020.
But, you know, I mean, it is that sort of a race. It's a kind of consolation cup, isn't it? You know, and QE came out a few years ago, do you remember, from the Melbourne Cup and won it. We've seen horses that have maybe run, you know, top 10, fringes of top 10 in the cup, come out and show their well-being against their right level of competition. Southern France may be better than that. Let's not forget, he did run third in a St. Ledger behind Kew Gardens.
Oh, I think he's
a
lot better.
Probably a bit better than
I mean, look at
the
former
division.
Downdraft, who beat a couple of starts ago. What about other horses on the day? Great to see Haydock come back well, and we saw the two fillies of Tony McAvoy, Keelong, and Pretty Brazen. But for mine, it was the third place getter in the Sandown Guineas, Heart of Poissons, who he was brilliant the way he was coming back on the line. And I know this has been a hobby horse of yours, Matty, but Kieran Maher said as well when I had a chat to him this morning, how good it is to see the Poissons de Lunes doing so well for Victorian breeding, but also those who have got a bit of stamina.
And they're a stable that'll back that in too. They're not afraid to buy those sort of horses. They've got the Colin McKennas and other owners who are happy to wait as well. So, and I reckon the Guineas, I think you're probably a bit harsh on the quality of this meeting. I think the Guineas, who's to say that the winner and Heart of Puissance and those sort of horses, when we see them clash again with the ones that went through the Caulfield Guineas and Golden Rose or whatever it was, there's nothing to say that these ones won't prove to be as good.
Yeah, they're still young horses. They're kind of like 18, 19-year-old footy players, aren't they?
I'm 100%. I said to Sharky on Friday, I think he's a Group 1 horse, and he scoffed at me.
Well, he's by Puissance de Lune out of a mare by Show of Heart, who was a rattling good horse, wasn't he, Show of Heart, over a mile and maybe a little bit further, not sure, but Caulfield Guineas winner, wasn't he? Show
he was more of a sprinter miler, to
was
be honest.
Was he a sprinter miler? Yeah, but he was a Guineas winner, wasn't he? Caulfield Guineas winner or place getter?
Didn't he get it on?
He got it on the disqualification of
was it Scalato?
Something like that. But you know, so it's a good pedigree with stamina from Puissance. And you know, I did a piece Derby Day when I wrote about Mitch Friedman's horse Southern Moon and how this could be the way for stamina to be brought back into the Australian blood pool. My colleague Damien's back at work from his honeymoon, and he's written a similar piece again today about Puissance de Lune. And you know, maybe the worm is turning, and we've got stallions like that that will get some patronage now.
Well, they keep saying that the Poms are wanting faster and faster horses now, and we're trying to bridge the gap with the staying horses, so we might end up meeting them halfway and share the Melbourne Cup in future.
And reduce the distance to 2,000 metres, maybe.
Just a quick one, too. Did you say Zipping Classic or Sandown Classic? Sandown Cup Taj Mahal. It was a Zipping Classic.
Zipping Classic. I did say that, I think, because he made all the running that day.
Before we get on to Hong Kong, New South Wales, our friends up there, they had the Hunter, $1 million race. Did you have a look at it, Matty? Savatiano was simply stunning, and Godolphin won the two features up there as well.
Yeah, I had a little Twitter exchange with someone yesterday about it, where the Twitter-er person, whatever you call the person who initiates the
Twitter,
was sort of having a go, basically saying, well, look at the success of putting on $1 million race, the crowd was big and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, is that what it's become now, that you fast-track things by putting on spectacular money that's to generate a spark interest in a crowd to get them to the track? And I thought about things like the Jericho, where it's attractive for very different reasons than that. So, I don't know. Look, it was a $300,000 field, probably, and it was $1 million race run at Newcastle, and it got the crowd there, and it was what it was.
Look, I'm pleased to see big races move to provincial tracks, because to me that's coming from somewhere else, from a long time ago. It always seemed a bit strange that just a handful of city tracks had all the big races. So I think it's great to see, whether or not if you'd put that race on for 300, as Matt says, you might have got the same.
Well, it's not over yet. Kembla Grange this Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
The
yeah.
Gong. $1 million race over a mile.
Both important cities for rugby league, too. Wollongong and Newcastle.
Oh, what are you getting at?
Oh, well, Mr. Valandis is, you know.
Well, you think that's played a part?
Not sure. I just know that they're very big rugby towns.
They are big league towns, but that's not like saying, you know, that Sale is a big footy town. I mean, you know, league is the dominant.
He is on the league.
He is. But. If they are big rugby league towns and there's lots of rugby league fans, they're kicking around with not much to do because the footy season's over. So maybe it's not that bad an idea to target them. You know, maybe get a few of the Dally M boys and the stars from the NRL, bit of cross promotional code. I mean, it's not that bad an idea, is it?
Ooh. I tell you what will be interesting is this Saturday we've got the two non-city meetings in Victoria and Sydney. We've got obviously Ballarat Cup Day, and then we've got Kembla Grange with the running of the Gong. I wonder what those figures will be this weekend in regards to turnover with the Saturday meetings of the two biggest states for racing, both provincial tracks.
I'll be curious, but I won't judge them on it either, because I don't care. I'm expecting it to be down. We've come off a very catched up period of year, time of year. We run night and day all the time. We run ourselves dizzy. We earn a heap of money. Yeah. I don't care if the provincial meetings are down.
I think we've just got to stop having every time judging the success or otherwise of a fixture by its turnover. I just think it's Matt has said so many times, the optics of it in the current environment are not great, talking about gambling being the only way.
There was a good
way.
Article from Peter Ryan on
my
the weekend.
Colleague Pete
did you,
wrote that.
Did you read that?
Well, Pete and I have talked a lot about these issues over the spring, and he got the chance to get that real estate on the back page of the sports section this weekend, and he did that, and I went out to Sandown. And
so
I thought
basically
it was excellent...
saying that administrators need to lead.
It was an excellent article.
And not focus on the turnover, not focus on the betting side of it, but tell the stories of the horses and the people to try and win.
Well, and
the general
also
public
emphasise the amount of welfare they're doing. Mm. You know,
and finally, they've had the combination of factors that have made them think that and come to that realisation. It's been sitting there for a long time, but now that. You know, there's so many damaging stories out there. Maybe it's now right in their line of vision that they have to confront this issue of excessive promotion of gambling, and that everything about racing is judged on turnover and gambling.
It's a kind of perfect storm to prod them into a complete volte-face and a rethink about how they perhaps present the whole sport. You know, the welfare issues coalescing with the kind of societal discrediting of gambling, maybe that everything needs to be.
I was having a chat to Dale Monteith about it the other day, and he was very much of the same view. He said it used to be about enjoying the sport, and now it's about the gambling. He's the chairman of Harness Racing Victoria, and his view was that it's crippling the reputation of racing.
Gambling. I think we all fell in love with it as a sport, didn't we? And it's a sport that's become an industry that's now become an industry that's kind of hooked on the gambling turnover, and now the wagering just runs everything.
We're going to take a break in a moment. Get to some SMSs first, though. $25 to get in on the Sandown Classic Day is a bit rich for the facilities and racing that's presented. I've been going to Sandown for years and would love to see it continue. That's from Daniel. Other SMSs. Hey, boys, went to the Cranbourne Tricode meeting on Saturday night. What a great night. It was brilliantly run by the club, and these sorts of nights should happen more often. That's from Matty O. Action, action, action. Races every 10 minutes. It's hard to... organised from a logistics point of view, but that was a winner. Watching, and unfortunately, you've got to flick between channels because they're three different codes. For a night like that, it would be magnificent if there is some deal done between Sky and Racing.com that you can sit there and watch a tri-code meeting on the one singular channel. 10-minute gaps, 10-minute every race.
Yep.
Brilliant.
I remember covering the first one. It was run on a Sunday 18 years ago, the first tri-code, can you believe? And I agree, because it was successful whilst buried amongst... There was Dunkeld, which was massive. There was Yay, there was Sandown, there was everything else in the state. And for the Cranbourne tri-code meeting to... exist in that space and still be successful was quite a... You'd like to see it get a bit more clear space, is what I'm saying, on a day, wouldn't you?
Oh, 100%. With redevelopments at Caulfield Mooney Valley, Racing Victoria is a massive chance to rejig the spring, move the entire carnival back 3 weeks, improve the pattern, and thus racing owns October, November. That's from John. Is Werribee owned by the club or is it Crown Land?
Isn't it a VRC affiliate or something?
Oh, I think it's got something to do with the VRC, so that person suggesting the cup should be run like on November 28th.
A lot of people talk about it, but it's never going to happen. The cup's not moving, therefore the remainder of the spring carnival won't move. We need to take a break. On the other side of this, I want to talk about Hong Kong.
The Verdict on RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Hot King Prawn, then I Victory, Premier's done. Regency Legends got a lift, but Othero's broken away. Three in front. Hot King Prawn beat the clock running on, but Othero, this is a rocket of the race course. Othero two in front from Hot King Prawn and beat the clock. Wow, what a three-year-old he is.
Oh, he's a superstar. Othero, 1.758. John Moore trained, winning the Jockey Club Sprint. He'll now be the favourite for the Hong Kong Sprint. It was simply stunning, that speed. Lynchy, when he crossed over... and then raced away in the straight. He's the most exciting horse in Hong Kong at the moment.
Well, he certainly seems to be now. The bubble seems to have burst around Beauty Generation, and he goes for that Group 1 sprint at the international meeting. And I note that they're saying Zach Purton will have to get down to the lightest he's done for a long, long time, £117.9, which, if my maths is right, is about 8 stone 5, 8 stone 6, which is... 54, something like that. 53 and a half, 54. Better mathematicians than me will solve that one.
But I asked Hong Kong Hutchie on Twitter last night, who would you rather be on, a Thero or Nature Strip over 1,100 metres?
In a straight line?
Wow.
Well, it's different for Nature Strip.
It is, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. One of them.
it'd be mouthwatering.
Yeah. Well, it certainly would. Maybe in a straight line. I haven't seen how a Thero goes. He's not run around in a straight line, is
no.
he? No. So, you know, you'd have to back Nature Strip. He's an older, stronger gelding.
Or has he run down the straight? Someone will tweet in and let me know. Hey, you were you watching with a smile or were you disappointed? Because we want to see good horses winning.
Yeah, and in defence of Bubble Boy, I mean, horses are animals. You know, who's to say he hasn't come up or he's not the horse he was? He might have lost two lengths for whatever reason that we don't know about. But having said that, I mean, it's just the ratings, the world rankings too. Like, they do live in a bubble over there. Oh. He spent 2 years running against almost the same opposition around the same circuit all the time. There's something unchallenging about that.
That's what they said about Winx, though.
No, well, it's not true. She raced left-handed, right-handed, yeah. Different tracks, different distance. I mean, he basically runs all the time at 1,400 or 1,600 at the same track. Yeah. And then they didn't go to Japan. Maybe they feared that he had a limitation that was going to get exposed by going to Japan. You know?
But it's interesting what you're saying. You know, they're not machines and they do maybe lose a length or two. It just shows you what an extraordinary mare Winx was and what an amazing job Chris Waller did to keep her up. You know, and Pete Moody before him with Black Caviar. Maybe it's easier with mares once they're in the zone.
Just with Beauty Generation, the one thing that gets me about him is given there's so many question marks over the cosy environment he races in and the lack of competition coming in and out, that he was always ranked so high in the Longines rankings. He was
I think it's a couple of days ago they came out again. I don't honestly think many people, or here in this part of the world, take the Longines rankings seriously. When you've got Crystal Ocean rated on top, won 128, equal with Enable.
I've got no issue with the top three. With Voldegeist.
Beauty Generation is 127. Voldegeist is 128 each of three.
Well,
Beauty Generation is 127. Now, Winx is still in there at 125 because it's obviously world ratings from the year. And Almond Eyes on 124. So they don't rate the Japanese.
Which is bizarre, given there isn't a horse on the planet on grass over 2,000 metres or above that would get near Armadon.
I'd like to back her to beat the top three, you know, mile and a half on turf,
Magical down on 122, who kept running into...
And Liscrocheur is on 121.
Does that factor in the Cox Plate or not?
It says from the 1st of January to the 10th of November.
Well, they clearly don't.
And Sandra and Elaine.
Well, and I think that's fair enough too.
Happy Clappers on 123.
Well, if they've put Almond Eye at 124, it means you know they don't rate her that highly. So Liscrocheur has to go below that, doesn't it? And it can't be a point below Almond Eye. So
Hats Aiken says unbeaten down the straight 1,000 to Thero. The track record 3 weeks ago. So this is where Australian racing, John Moore is going to have to hand over his ticket. Gee, they should throw everything. Valandis probably is, to get Thero to Australia. It would be magnificent to see him take on some of our best sprinters.
Very hard to wrench them out of the Hong Kong system, isn't it? Hong Kong Jockey Club's very protective of its horses and trainers, so...
But
who
it's
knows?
A compulsory retirement point, is it, for him at age 70?
Yeah, that's right. A couple of SMSs coming through. Manny Galagotis' birthday today. Happy birthday, Manny, as well. You've had a busy couple of days. In relation to that, and I agree with this, a few tweets and SMSs saying, well, why weren't the punters told about what occurred with Lavendi pre-race?
Manny or Peter... we had a conference call earlier. I can't remember which one said
but
which.
But they're 100% right on that.
Yeah, yeah. If the horse is disrupted and walks in the mounting yard, a lesser horse.
More information should be given out, at least to, if not on Twitter, to those on racing.com. Jane Ivel, who's looking at the horses, say, hey, this horse has just had a pre-race blood test or a pre-race trot-up inspection. That needs to be broadcast publicly.
Whether the stewards' role is to bring it to attention or whether with .com has a lot of staff covering
no,
the races,
no, that's
whether
the
they should have someone...
No, that's the stewards. If the stewards are doing something, they need to notify.
Well, they do pre-race bloods all the time and trot-ups all the time. Do you want them to notify everyone all the time of a trot-up or a pre-race blood?
Why not? Then the punter can make up their mind whether they're happy or unhappy.
For the most part, it's a thing that happens and it doesn't affect anything.
I don't think. More information.
It's up to the vision provider on the day with their reporters to probably have someone at various points. And, yeah, okay, well, I've just observed up here that this horse has got a bit fractious when they did this standard thing.
So. Now, I like this. Hong Kong Hutchie's just had a crack at you. This is good. Athero, he says again, unbeaten down the straight. And tell Maddie they've got more international exposure during the international races to help line up the global form. So he hardly lives in a bubble, your mate, Beauty
they
Generation.
They all come to him. He doesn't go to them. No one, he doesn't get, where was, has he ever left Hong Kong, Beauty Generation?
No, but he's taken on the internationals as well.
Yeah, that's
Hong
fine,
Kong
but he does it in the comfort of his backyard all the time.
Well, so do our horses, so, you know, Winx did it.
Did you say Winx was a bubble girl?
He doesn't even move tracks.
No, I know. I know, but maybe it's an interesting one because they do get good horses to go to Hong Kong. They don't always get the absolute top liners, but then we don't either. We don't get the absolute guns don't come from Europe to us either.
This week, we're building up to Ballarat Cup Day. I hope Harbour Views, we've got an SMS here saying, will Harbour Views get a start? To be honest, I'm not too sure. We'll make a few calls to find out how the field is shaping up for the Ballarat Cup on Saturday. That's from Glenn. Big day for the local region. It's always a good meeting. They got the anti-clockwise, or is it the clockwise, two-year-old race?
Few issues with that. I'm going to look into that. Few issues with jockeys dissatisfied with the circuit for the anti-clockwise.
Has it changed this year?
No, they've always been unhappy with it. They're just more unhappy now.
In regards to
the angles of it, the turn, all that sort of stuff. So, I had a chat to a jockey the other day. Said there's a lot of disquiet amongst the jockeys about that.
All right, and obviously the focus now turns over to the west as well. Hawley and myself will be heading over there. Looking forward to that. We'll be doing the show on Saturday morning and Gareth's Friday show over there from the west. Railway Stakes Day. There'll be a fair bit of eastern. Contingent horses heading over there as well. But what about, did you see Willie Pike on Saturday? He had five winners. He second and third in about three or four other races as well. And a couple of absolutely star Bob Peters horses. The future over there. There was this horse, I'm looking for it now. Flirtini was brilliant for Simon Miller. Sublime Image was good. And the horse that won the Champions Fillies, where is it? Here it is, Tuscan Queen.
Mm.
Write her name down. Absolute star. So we'll be looking forward to bringing you all of that this week, building up towards the west. Lynchy, leave us with a thought from the weekend and wrapping up the Spring Carnival as well.
Wet was my one word to describe the Spring Carnival. Wet and cold, but it always delivers drama, you know, and Vow and Declare has to be the highlight. For this coming weekend, I'm looking forward to going to Perth for the Railway Stakes. So
excellent.
Be excellent.
And also, Marmello, we just got an SMS about that too, officially retired right. During the week.
I got absolutely pillaged by the bookies up at Yay, and what I'm most looking forward to is getting square with them at Woolamai. Next week.
Now, hang on. The SMS says he's retired, but we're going to follow that up because he was retired, then he wasn't retired, with Johnny O'Neill wanting to try and get him back on track as well. So that saga continues. All right, that's it from the verdict. We covered some ground today, both here in Melbourne and overseas. Looking forward to trying to find a winner next at Mornington. We've got Handbrake Harry White up. He is flying solo. He has done the form in depth. We're also going to have a chat to a young superstar jockey on the way up.